WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's TV Week on Fresh Air, featuring interviews with the stars and creators of classic and current TV shows. Today, sketch comedy and variety shows. The first great TV variety show was Your Show of Shows, starring Sid Caesar. This live 90-minute program ran on NBC Saturday nights from 1950 to 54. Several important writers got started writing for Sid Caesar's various TV shows, including Mel Brooks, Larry Gelbart, Neil Simon, Woody Allen, and our first guest, Carl Reiner. Reiner was also Sid Caesar's second banana on Your Show of Shows. Reiner went on to create The Dick Van Dyke Show and to direct films, including The Jerk, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, The Man with Two Brains, and All of Me, which each starred Steve Martin. Here's a sketch from Your Show of Shows featuring Carl Reiner as a roving reporter interviewing the famous Viennese sleep expert, Dr. Sigmund von Sedative, played by Sid Caesar.
Doctor, I wonder if you can show us your own personal method for falling asleep.
Of course, that's all. See, most of the people, they walk in when they, you know, they just get into bed very gently, you know? My method, you come in the bed, you flop into bed. You flop into bed and you relax a bit. Well, then you concentrate. You concentrate, you say, all right, toes, good night. Good night, toes, come on, go to sleep. When you see right away, they curl up and they drop off. Not to sleep, they drop off to sleep. And then you say, good night, ankles. Good night, knees. I'm pretty sure you see the legs are asleep. When you tell the stomach, come on, good night, stop the mixing in there. Hang on to sleep. Go to sleep. When you tell the chest, you did a nice job today. You did work good. Stop the breathing. Come on. When you tell the throat, come on, okay, stop that. All right, brain, come on, go to sleep. Brain, will you please go to sleep? Come on, everybody else is sleeping. Why don't you go? Listen, don't holler so loud, will you please? You'll wake up the stomach. Will you please go to sleep like a night? I got a brain that's out of his mind. Will you please go to sleep again? Well, don't holler so much, will you please? You'll wake up the whole... You don't want to go to sleep, huh? You don't want to go to sleep? All right. I got it. All right, everybody up! Everybody. Someday you want to go to sleep, I wouldn't let you sleep. Now, what are you...
I spoke with Carl Reiner in 1989. In the writers' meetings for the Sid Caesar show?
Yes.
Was there ever an air of complete desperation where you had this whole room of really funny people, but they were just on the verge of killing themselves because they weren't coming up with what they wanted to?
Oh, I tell you, you're reminding me now of a moment when, after we'd been on about 2 or 3 years, and we had done 5 sketches a week for maybe 2 or 3 years, and that was an hour and a half show, and one day, on a Monday, we came in, and we sat around trying to fill some of the forms, and everybody came up blank. Everybody had dried up at the same time, and we all decided that was it. We said to Max Liebman, then we said, we're going to come on the air and just sit there, the four of us, Sid Caesar, Imogene Coke, myself, and Howard Morris, and just stare at the set. And then we'd go blank, and somebody would come and say, ladies and gentlemen, there is no more comedy. We have done all we can. No more. This is it. Good night. And we were going to do that. And we laughed about that. As a matter of fact, we decided to try a sketch where we started a sketch, like a vice president, people being ushered into a room, into a salon where they were going to obviously perform a sketch. One by one, they say, Lord Trickston, General so-and-so, they come in and they sit down on a couch and just sit there without doing anything. And we showed it to Max. We said, this is the sketch. We just sat there. And he said, what is that? What is that? We sat for 5 minutes. And of course, everybody broke up. They said, they're not going to do anything. They're just going to sit there. We said, that's it, Max. There's no more comedy. We couldn't come up with an idea. So we think we'd like to do that. America will tune in and say, they're just sitting there. They haven't moved in 5 minutes. One guy crossed his leg, and that was it. We were that desperate at that point. Of course, that week, we probably came up with the best show we ever did.
Several of the writers on the program were Jewish. You, Mel Brooks, toward the end of the
Mel Brooks is Jewish?
That's what I heard.
That's a shock.
Woody Allen worked on the show toward its end, and who knows who else I'm not mentioning here. But I was wondering if you were allowed to do Jewish characterizations, to have Yiddish words or to use a Jewish accent on the show.
No, I don't think we ever used a Jewish accent. I didn't know. After the war and during the war and before the war, it became... people decided that making fun of any ethnic group was not good for people who were being slaughtered by somebody who thought they weren't worthy of living. So we did use a lot of Yiddish words, and especially in our Japanese movies, we did. I remember some of the names, Shtaka Yamagura. Shtaka meaning strong, but it had a Japanese sound to it. Baron Kashimoto. Kasha is a word, as a food. But we always, anytime we used a Jewish word, we didn't allow that to lay out there alone. We always had another joke that everybody who didn't understand the word would be watching at the same time that joke was happening. We were very responsible to our audience not to do inside jokes that only some people would get.
I bet there were a lot of Yiddish-type sketch ideas that you came up with behind the scenes that you ended up tossing out since it wasn't appropriate for TV.
Well, as a matter of fact, the 2,000-year-old man was in the office with us every day, and every time we got bored, I turned to Mel and I interviewed the 2,000-year-old man.
Oh, really?
Who basically was of the Hebrew persuasion. So we had that.
How did you come up with the idea for the 2,000-year-old man? What was the story behind that?
Well, it was a very simple story. I came in one morning, having seen something irresponsible on television, and somebody who actually claimed to have been someplace they couldn't have been, and I said, oh, that's a ridiculous thing. I don't know why they put that on the air. And in anger, I said to Mel, I understand you were actually at the scene of the crucifixion, sir. He said, oh, boy. And then started a 10-year... interview that I did every time we got bored in the office. I'd turn to Mel and question about all the people he knew, having lived 2,000 years from Jesus Christ on to the present day.
Now, how did that end up being recorded and being done on television?
Well, we had done it for years at parties. We were always invited to parties, sort of like command performances, and we didn't feel we wanted to do that. We figured we had enough stature to be just invited to eat and talk, but I always brought a tape recorder with me, and I felt that I loved hearing Mel do this, and I wanted to have a record of it. So I had about 10 years of this stuff before we got into a situation where Joe Fields, who was a big writer, producer on Broadway, he used to love it. And every time he'd have a party, invite Mel and I to do it. And he did it on the coast once, and this is the West Coast. And every major star was there. And George Burns came up to us and said, you better put it on record or I'm going to steal it. Eddie G. Robinson came up. He says, make a Broadway play out of it. I want to play that man. And Steve Allen came up and said, why don't you put it on record? And we said, no, no. He says, why don't you let me pay for the tape? I have a little record company. If you don't like it, you can tear it, burn it, expunge it, whatever you want. And we did it. We did it in front of a crowd of 200 people, this whole ad-lib tape for 2 hours. We cut it down to 47 minutes, and it worked. And then we did 4 more albums after that.
I'd like you to meet now a gentleman who I've had the pleasure of meeting and interviewing 2 or 3 times before, the 2,000-year-old man.
Hello there.
Hi,
how are
sir?
You?
How are
yes,
you?
Good to see you.
You know, many people still do not believe that you are 2,000 years old, but it has been authenticated.
Yes, it has, certainly.
You are that.
I have a birth certificate in the land of Og. But I don't carry my birth certificate around.
Why?
Because it's a bolded, subscribed.
Oh, I see, yes. Well, that
can't carry
would be
it.
Cumbersome.
No, credit cards, that's enough.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Are there any more secrets you're ready to divulge about why and how to live 2,000 years?
Well, one of the big things that's kept me rolling along singing a song is garlic.
Garlic has
yes.
kept you alive? How can garlic keep you alive?
Well, garlic keeps you alive because, well, you know how you die, don't you? The scientific reason how you die is that the angel of death, see, rings your apartment bell and you let him in and bang, you know.
Comes
in and says, okay, Murray, this is it. And
how does garlic help?
Usually comes at night, right?
Yes.
So before I retire, I'll eat myself a nice pound and a half of garlic. Then I lay down in bed, and I pull up my crazy quilt. And I'll starting to retire and snore.
And how does the garlic help?
Well, the angel of death, you know, comes in. He comes over to me, taps me on the shoulder. I say, who is it? And usually he goes, whoa! He takes right off. He's out the door. That's...
Well, that's an interesting theory.
Sure. You know about the kiss of death, right?
Yes.
Sure, he's not going to kiss me. I'm full of garlic.
I see.
Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. Our interview with Carl Reiner was recorded in 1989. Larry Gelbart will talk about writing for Sid Caesar after a break. This is Fresh Air.